Mont Smoot, you may know or may not know that council elections are upon us very, very soon. Simone Smoot is a first-time candidate for the Camden ward in Glenara. She's passionate about what she can bring to council, and she believes that there needs to be a lot of change effected. So here's my interview with Simone.
So as everybody knows, it's council election time coming up very soon on the 24th of October by mail this time. And a new candidate for Camden ward of Glenara is Simone Smoot. Good morning, Simone.
Good morning, Gary. Thanks for having me on the show.
So what's motivated you to break out of your daily routine and try and become a councillor?
Gary, I think that about a year and a half ago I started becoming more aware of issues in the area and concerns that different people had, and started attending council meetings, not every single one, but probably two out of three council meetings over the last year and a half, and just really watching what's happening and very concerned that what's actually happening doesn't really represent necessarily what ratepayers and residents want to be happening in their homes, in their municipality.
Give us an example.
So one example, obviously, with all of the high-rise development in areas, which has fairly big impact on people in terms of impact on their privacy, impact on their light access, impact, of course, on anyone who's got solar panels on their roof. If high-rises goes up, you know, reduces the return that they're going to get on their investment, and there's no protection for that. So
right.
I've been watching, you know, council and also individuals and residents have been spending tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars taking cases to VCAT. And I just think that with more clarity and certainty around all of issues like this, we wouldn't be wasting so much of residents' time on issues, and they could really focus on what are the main priorities for their own life rather than just trying to fight to save their amenity in their neighbourhood.
Now, some of the established councillors have told me that, you know, it's all very well. I mean, and this was a few weeks ago in relation to some plans that are up for discussion at the moment, that really council is only doing what the state government tells it to do, and that if they don't propose certain types of plans, that the state government rejects them, so that they're really not in charge of what's going on. They're really doing what the state government wants to do, and of course the state government recognises that until COVID the economy's been growing and the population's been growing at a fast rate, so we have to develop to be able to accommodate that.
So there's a couple of underlying things there. First of all, we elect our local representatives to represent us, which includes advocating to state government about what we want. And I've not seen Glenara do much of that. Now, admittedly, I'm not in the inner workings. I'm not currently a councillor. But there seems to be very long delays between council taking an action and then responding to, for instance, the Minister of Planning's letters back. And so to me, that just appears that there's not an urgency to look after residents. Practically, yes, with you know, quite a high intake rate relative to historical levels in terms of information in Australia, and a lot of that coming to Melbourne, the state government's decided that should be absorbed in the kind of inner suburbs.
Yes, we're already a very wide city. You travel a long way from one end of Melbourne to the other, and that's why we're now densifying, if I can make up words.
I think densification is an actual word in the dictionary, so you're fine there.
It must be a new one.
I think though it comes down to densification and the different ways that can happen. So, I mean, densification's been happening for quite a while when they allowed dual occupancy, and so blocks that used to hold one family home might now hold two or three townhouses.
Yeah.
So, you know, back to the 50s when they had step-up apartments that were two or three levels, I think what people are very concerned about is when we're starting to get, you know, 10 to 15 level story high-rises, that it radically changes the character of the neighbourhood and particularly our shopping strips, which often have that transport running through and sort of being identified as activity centres.
So, I mean, for instance, in the area that I live in, which is Bentley, we see buildings going up along the shopping strip, which is a very popular older style shopping strip, but many of those buildings, which were maybe two stories high, are now being replaced with five, six, up to eight stories, I think, we see going on a lot. So you'd be against that happening to accommodate younger families?
I certainly think that we need to have a really strategic plan for that. And so I looked in detail. The Glen Huntly structure plan was presented at council, at the last council meeting, and more of a step back approach. So if you're going to have eight stories on the main road, it really needs to step down to four to two so that you can get back without that huge overreach and impact on people nearby. And all that's happening is the really tall buildings are going up, but there's none of that step back. So it's a huge impost. Now, would I absolutely say no to everything? No, I would actually listen to what residents want. And if residents feel the proposal that's been put forward is something that they can accept and live with, then I would feel comfortable supporting that at council. But, you know, if we're getting 1,000, 2,000 or more signatures in a petition, then I really, really would listen to what residents want.
So you don't think residents have enough of a voice? I mean, because most of these structure plans are developed after communal consultation.
Consultation.
It must be too early in the morning. After community consultation, surely there's a process there where people can give feedback, and I know that the council has sent out forms for people to fill in
So look, the council would certainly claim that they consult the community, and let's just take a look at the different ways that they do that and how effective it is when you actually look at the small number of people that respond to most of their outreach. So for people who are directly impacted, they may get a letter in the mailbox. A lot of people look at it, it's not a bill, they don't even read it. Then they usually have information in the Glen Iron News, again, which many times I haven't even had it delivered to me. So that's one issue, is in terms of the effectiveness of the communication. And then not everyone reads that. So yes, residents do have some sort of responsibility, but I think when we're talking about things that will have a major permanent impact on people, we need to be a little bit more proactive about that outreach. And so rather than, you know, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on consultants to write really fancy, shiny-looking reports, how about we actually just door knock and let people know so that people actually do respond? You know, I'd like to see, and I know I work in data collection and analysis, I'd like to see much higher participation rates than 1% of the impacted population.
Is that the sort of participation rate we're getting?
Generally, in an open survey, people are pretty happy with the 4% response rate. But, you know, if you're talking about... I'd have to have my finger on the exact numbers to talk, but we're not talking about large numbers of people responding to almost anything that I've seen the council put out, except when there's been, you know, a major outcry and petitions. So is the consultation actually collecting a fair representative picture of what residents and ratepayers want? I'd suggest that's highly unlikely.
Right. Okay, but I would put it to you that at the level of local government, we'd probably do more of that than at any other level of government in Australia. But at least we try. As short of, as you say, knocking on doors, which is an expensive and difficult task, I think we're doing a pretty good job, aren't we?
Look, I would say that we're making efforts, which is great. I don't think it's gold standard.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, now one of the issues that helped motivate you to involve yourself in local government was the Save Inkerman campaign, and that's a campaign out not going ahead with a cycle path on Inkerman Road to block off parking on one side of Inkerman Road for most of the length of it through Glen Ira. Are you a cyclist?
Uh, so I would put myself as a recreational cyclist. I'm really happy going to an off-road trail and riding, and I particularly like to get away. So riding along rivers and out a bit more in nature is something that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. For a while there, I did have one of the bike, hydro bikes. So I used to ride my kids to school in it.
All right, right.
We sold that when they got too big to fit in the carrier bit. And so hopefully it's having a nice free time up in Queensland sunshine these days.
It'll be nice to be there.
But no, I wouldn't call myself a commuter cyclist.
Right, okay. But you're certainly opposed to the plan of putting a cycle path down Kingman Road.
I question the council's cycling action strategy. I question their priorities and I actually question their analysis. So let me sort of start first of all, and then I'll come back to Inkerman specifically. But as a parent, my first priority would be putting separated cycling paths alongside schools.
Mm-hmm.
So now, two reasons. One, they're our most vulnerable population, kids who are riding, and obviously it then allows parents do not have to drop off, and that's a really big issue because one of the main causes of congestion during peak hour is actually parents dropping their kids off at school.
Yep.
So if we can have all secondary school kids making their own way, riding, catching public transport, that would be amazing. But also particularly, you know, at the older end of primary school as well. So when I actually looked through their cycling plan, only two streets out of their 15 high priority streets actually go past school. There's no planned cycle path, and I know it is a state road, past, for instance, Glenira College. There is one planned for McKinnon High, which would probably be the largest secondary school in our whole municipality, and there's no indication that that's a high priority. So for me, I think their priorities are wrong. I question their analysis about the location. Coming back to Inkerman specifically, let's be honest, its purpose is not to serve the people of Glenira, because it's right at the edge of the municipality. If you were trying to serve the people of Glenira, you'd start off with paths down the centre of the municipality to help people get around. Mm-hmm. The purpose is to link two state routes, to link the Gerring Trail and St Kilda Road. And I really think if state government is prepared to invest in completely reconfiguring St Kilda Road to have a completely separated bike path down the middle, apparently they're moving the tram track, there's no reason that they couldn't do that for Dandenong as well. And the
absolutely.
It doesn't have driveways, it doesn't have side streets, it just has the major intersections. And those major intersections could be dealt with eventually, which obviously would be costly, with underpasses or overpasses for bikes. So what you're then creating is a completely uninterrupted flow of cycle traffic through to the new St Kilda Road path once it's created, but also just safer.
I've never understood why they picked Inkerman over Dandenong Road, which is two blocks away.
And the stress that it's caused for residents and the vilification from really what I would call is some people are almost cultish. No reaching out, no empathy from people who are in terms of how can we work together to create something that would meet your concerns. So, and the concerns are far more. They are definitely parking, but they're far more than that. It's about the amenity, it's being able to get in and out of your own property if you've got parking on your property. It's about family being able to come and visit you. The cause for removing parking in residential streets, I think, is frankly antisocial, right? Because I want my children to be able to come and visit me one day. I don't know if they'll be able to afford to live in Glenira or how close they'll be, and I would like them to be able to come and visit me, and they may need to come by or choose to come by car. I'd like my parents to be able to visit me. You know, I'd like my friends to be able to visit me. So when they talk about increasing development and putting more pressure on parking, but then actually removing it, I think that they actually need to sit down and think more strategically about what they're trying to achieve. And if it's just an anti-car approach, then don't pretend it's about, which is some of the claims that councils have made, don't pretend it's about improving congestion. Don't pretend that it's going to radically... It took that 50, 60 years for, you know, some of the cities in Holland to get up to 50% of people cycling.
Yeah, of course.
It's not an overcome the congestion.
Absolutely. When you look at the cycle paths there, they're beautifully developed. And obviously that would have taken a lot of time.
Yeah, and the amenity that's coming up, it's really, you know, in the sort of some of the plans that have been made public or available on the web, they're starting to talk about how would we make it safer for cyclists. We'll close off all of the side streets. That would mean for me that I would literally have to drive completely around the block to pick my parents up to take them somewhere instead of just sitting around the corner. I mean, they're significant amenity issues.
Absolutely significant. And then you look at Dandenong, right, which is three times the width. I mean, well, probably four times the width.
Yeah.
And there's so much you could do. And it's a good example, I think, of not really listening.
Well, I think not truly understanding residents and trying to impose things on residents that just don't reflect the way that people live.
Yep.
Which again links back to my concerns about how deep and sincere the consultation is. They may be ticking a lot of boxes, but are they actually listening? Now, I actually support safer cycling. I just think it needs to be done in the right way, and it needs to be done in a way that brings the community along, not hurts people.
Absolutely. Now, you've said in your platform, moving along to a different topic, talking about a COVID-sensitive council, you're saying that it should be more attuned to people's needs, but also you want real rate relief for all residents, not just hardship cases.
Yeah, look,
is that feasible, though, because local government still needs to deliver its services?
Absolutely. Look, I think when we're talking about the rate relief, a lot of councils have done far more than Glen Eira. In terms of rates relief. And we're not talking about this being a permanent thing. We're talking about doing something to make the next 12 months less stressful for people. So when you have a budget, there are certainly things that can be delayed, which means you don't need as much income in the 12-month period. And there are ways to handle it so it doesn't have as big an impact on council. So some councils have actually frozen the rate, but other councils, what they've done is allowed it to increase in the normal process and then offered a discount, which means that jump next year, instead of being whatever percentage it is, and you know they claim, well, we kept to the 2% rate cap, but you know, I know my rates went up almost between 9% and 10%, so it's really not 2%, and that's because the valuation on my property, I think, is unrealistic, and also the valuations on all our properties were done in January. So that was before the whole COVID situation.
Certainly.
But, you know, yes, the valuations were done then, but I think the council approved the rates in June, I believe, and so they've had plenty of time to start to see that the impact that this is having on people is monumental. You know, it's not everyone's lost their income, but even people that haven't lost their income might have lost half their income, and just might be feeling very stressed and uncertain. So the more that we can support people who are part of our community in the short term, as I said, it's not about stripping all our essential services. We're still going to have aged care, we're still going to have internal child and health, we're still going to have garbage collection, but it's about looking at what costs we can actually reduce or postpone, but delay some of our projects so that we can just give people some breathing space. There are just so many people struggling with mental health issues.
Absolutely.
Of the enormity of what we're all experiencing together.
Yeah, it's a terrible time. It's shocking. And I think the impact, and as it drags on longer and longer, unfortunately Melbourne's having a bad run, it's affecting those particular issues, mental health, etc., in particular, a lot more. People are sick of it, and I understand that.
I think, people have sort of reached the point where they're weary of it, they're worn down.
They are. And, well, hopefully we can come out of it quickly, and I guess on the good side, we're doing better than a lot of places in the world. Wouldn't want to be in Israel at the moment, for instance.
And on the good side, we're in spring and we're heading towards summer. So I think blue skies and sunshine, just generally, we know from health research, just makes us feel happier anyway.
Absolutely. which takes me to the next issue, which you mentioned here, and that is open spaces, which Glen Eira is famous for having not enough of. You know, and you've talked about the development of Caulfield Racecourse.
Yes.
So, Is that happening? We hear about it going to happen, but I'm not sure what the schedule is, what the timetable for that is.
So the timetable is apparently about 5 years. There is a detailed master plan that is available, I think, on Facebook, and there's a survey so people can provide feedback. And look, it is really exciting because it will make the centre of Caulfield Racecourse accessible. The plan, last time I saw it, which is a few months ago, included some nature spaces, so I think they're planning to retain one of the lakes as a wetland. It's going to include a separate walking, running path and a separate bicycle track so that there's no worries about the intermingling. And it will include quite a few sporting facilities. So I'd have to look back at the plans, but I think there was volleyball, basketball, hockey. So it really catering to the shortage of both relaxation, open space, as well as for individual exercise and group sports.
Yeah, which is something we really need, especially as we densify. We really need more of them.
Absolutely. Like, not right opposite the race course, all those towers are going up, so they're going to need that open space. Absolutely. That greenery that the research shows helps reduce the stress hormones in our body. Mm.
Absolutely. Now, how are you going to be telling people about yourself in these COVID times? You can't get out letterbox or any of those sorts of things at the moment.
So that's interesting news. So my Facebook page has been launched as this goes live. So all my policies will be up for people to comment on. I'll be collecting feedback. And actually, the state government amended the campaigning rules, and as of yesterday, letterbox drops are now allowed. You can either use a proper distribution centre, which is obviously quite costly, and that's what I'm sure the people who are standing from the formal parties are doing, but... For those independents like myself, you can get a whole bunch of residents, neighbours to letterbox drop. They've got up to 2 hours of exercise per day to help out. So I think that's a really good move in terms of democracy, is allowing people to share what their vision is for Glenora with residents before they vote.
Simone Smith, good luck, and thanks for talking with us today. And look forward to your campaigning.
Great. Thanks so much, Gary. You keep well.
You too. All the best.